right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, May 28th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday. We almost made it. At least this was a short week this week. But every week just seems to be the same. It is 61 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York. It looks like we're probably going to get a little bit of rain, but hey, I'm not complaining. It actually has been pretty dry up here for weeks on end. I don't know, a few passing storms, but nothing like we've been seeing in Texas. I saw that there were some more massive storms and flooding. It's pretty unbelievable what's going on there. So where do we go today? I think my brain has finally stopped short-circuiting after yesterday. Sorry about that, but there's just too many things on my plate, and I have a method that gets me through the day so I can do all that I have to do. And when there's a curveball that's thrown out there that really starts to get me upset, it just kind of ruins everything for me because, you know, we got to be happy, people. And we got to keep the shit down because otherwise I just can't do all this. It doesn't work for me. So anyway, I think we're all right today. So you know what? There's just so much stuff. I really have no idea what I feel like talking about today, but I guess what we're going to hit up. Of course, I saw the story yesterday morning about the smallpox. Was it smallpox? No, anthrax this time. Whoops. Anthrax being shipped to 9 different states, as well as over to South Korea, accidentally by the DOD. I want to look at that because we've been looking at pathogens for a while and some of the funky things that have been going on, like, oh, mysterious, never before seen, first time in 50 years we've ever seen it here. And we want to connect some dots, I think. So anyway, please excuse me, though. I have been having mega allergy issues now the last 2 days over this cottonwood, which is another pathogen. Cottonwood is just exploding everywhere, and it makes me feel like I am just brain swollen, which I do. I literally feel like my brain is swollen right now. So I'm in slow gear, not in fast gear yet. But let's take a look at that. I get a story out of Off the Grid News. It's actually been in a bunch of places. Let's looky. Pentagon just accidentally shipped live anthrax to 9 states. And, you know, are people going to get upset about this? Probably not. But we need to, like, dig back now through the last year and kind of take a look why they're probably not going to be jumping up and down screaming. So let's look at this from yesterday. Anyway, Pentagon said on Wednesday it accidentally shipped samples of live anthrax to labs in 9 states and is now working with the CDC to contain it. Department of Defense is collaborating with the CDC in their investigation of the inadvertent transfer of samples containing live bacillus anthraxis, also known as anthrax, from a DOD lab in Dugway, Utah, to labs in 9 different states. I wonder if they list them in here. Yeah. Samples were shipped late last week via a commercial shipper. 2 labs in these states: California, Texas, Wisconsin, Tennessee, Maryland, Virginia, Delaware, New Jersey, and New York. It does not say South Korea in this article, but there is a clip we're going to hear. It mentions South Korea as well, which, of course, is where we have government bases. Military, I don't know. What's in South Korea? Probably Navy, I would think. The DOD was working as part of a DOD effort to develop a field-based test to identify biological threats in the environment. Now, I was talking about this the other day, how since 2001, when we had the first, oh my God, anthrax attack that we remember in recent history, they were working on these small biosensors that they were going to be able to put all over cities to do, like, early warning of some sort of biological pathogen. It says, out of an abundance of caution, the DOD has stopped the shipment of this material from its labs pending a completion of the investigation. It says the Maryland lab was the first to determine that it was anthrax. So, here's the question. Did these labs even know that it was coming? Like, there's pretty sketchy details right now, so I'd love to hear the whole story when it happens. But the fact that we already had a Senate subcommittee last summer looking at how all of these other oopses happened with these virulent materials being found in an unsecured it wasn't a filing. I always say it's a filing cabinet, but it wasn't. It was some unsecured, refrigerator or whatever. And then, whoops! Oh, we exposed, I think, 75 workers to anthrax last summer. And then, oh my God, last August we found an ISIS laptop that talked about bioterror. I mean, do you guys see the dots connecting here? And then we just have all these never before scenes, like I said, with the pneumonic plague we had in the dog and people catching it, or the never before seen tick, the newest tick virus that was out of Kansas, right near where they moved the new Plum Island. We also had the new tick virus that's just like Lyme's disease, but even worse and no treatment, and it kills you, that they found in Connecticut. When we look at the whole picture, and then we look at Big Pharma, and we look at how they make their profits, and we look at how they're making us scared, and we look at this whole vaccine movement and the Vaccinate All Children Act of 2015 and the standing order to make sure we get all the adults vaccinated, you start to see that how these quote unquote accidents probably weren't really accidents. Or if they were accidents, then I think, why aren't these people being shit canned? Is what I want to know. You work for a facility that handles virulent material that can be used in bioterror, and whoops, you shipped out live virus, not killed virus, live virus via commercial shipping, no less. So what is that, like FedEx or UPS Ground? And someone still gets to keep their job. So, all right, let me connect here. We're going to listen now to the news clip that echo that Pigmine uploaded this morning. Pentagon sent live anthrax to nine labs in South Korea. Maybe it'll work.
We begin with that developing story tonight. The Pentagon acknowledging a major mistake, sending live anthrax from a facility in Utah. They sent samples to nine states, one even sent overseas to South Korea. They thought that the samples, the spores, were dead, but tonight one of those samples was in fact live anthrax, and now the urgent effort to test the others. The Pentagon saying there is no risk to the general public. Dr. Besser is standing by, but we begin with ABC Senior Justice Correspondent Pierre Thomas.
Tonight, state health departments are racing to make sure no one has been contaminated by anthrax accidentally shipped from a military weapons facility. And the Centers for Disease Control is on the ground in Utah working to find out how and why the Pentagon shipped commercially some live anthrax spores from a facility in Utah to labs in nine states and another in South Korea. So far, health officials say the risk for exposure to the deadly biological agent is low. But health and research officials have fanned out to all those labs to see how the material was handled and if personnel were exposed. The Defense Department normally ships live anthrax at high levels of biosecurity. But in this case, they were shipped at a lower level because the spores were thought to be dead. Anthrax is considered a potential biological weapon, as the nation saw in a nightmare that unfolded soon after the 9/11 attacks, when five people were killed and 17 were infected.
And Pierre Thomas with us live now from Washington. And Pierre, no signs of any illness from this tonight.
David, no signs of illness at the labs in those nine states, but the scientists who work with the anthrax are being offered antibiotics as a precaution.
All right, ABC's Pierre Thomas leading us off tonight. Pierre, thank you. And ABC's chief medical editor, Dr. Richard Besser, is here. And Rich used to run the CDC's anthrax unit, and you were telling me earlier that when anthrax is inhaled, you have an 85% fatality rate?
That's right. This is a big deal. And not because anyone has gotten sick, but the potential was there. You're allowed to ship anthrax through commercial means like this. But when you do, the precautions are very different. If one of these packages had burst open in transit, it could have been deadly.
And they thought that these spores were dead, but were not?
Exactly. They're going to be trying to figure out now, how did it happen that live spores were shipped out?
All right, Rich, and you'll stay on this. Thanks so much.
You gotta love it when even our own high security military labs are shipping out live pathogens via commercial. I just can't even get over it. Via commercial shipping. There should. I don't care if it's dead or not. We shouldn't be shipping this stuff out commercially out of a Department of Defense facility. What a bunch of idiots, in all honesty. So now let's go back to last summer and listen to some of this.
The CDC and the FBI are trying to solve a startling mystery this morning. They want to know how 6 vials of smallpox were packed away and forgotten at a government lab outside Washington. A scientist cleaning out an unsecured storage room stumbled upon the deadly pathogens last week. The tubes apparently sat there for decades.
He stumbled upon them.
Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. John LaPook is with us. Good morning. Morning. We know that smallpox is only permitted in 2 labs in the world, right. The CDC and one in Russia. How could this happen?
Well, an NIH researcher was cleaning out a cold storage room, comes across a cardboard box which has some cotton in the bottom of it, and then he sees some old test tubes there. And some are labeled typhus, influenza, mumps, and then he sees one that's labeled variola, which is the scientific word for smallpox. He contacts the NIH. The NIH contacts the CDC. They bring in the FBI and the World Health Organization.
And I understand even the White House was informed.
Right. The National Security Council was informed. And the reason is smallpox was supposedly eradicated in 1980. And all of the world's supplies were supposedly destroyed except for in the 2 places that you mentioned. So the question is, how did it end up in this storage room? And that was a great concern.
Mm-hmm. And was anybody exposed?
Nobody was exposed. So what happened was they brought in a big team, security team. They immediately moved it to a secure facility. It was kept there for a while, and then it was brought down under the guidance of the FBI to the Centers for Disease Control. They analyzed it into the wee hours a couple of days ago, and it turned out to be smallpox.
Some workers just a month ago mishandled some samples of anthrax. Now they find smallpox, which is supposed to be gone. What is going on?
I think these are 2 separate instances. The anthrax situation was something where the CDC said clearly there was a break in protocol, and they're trying to deal with this and make sure it never happens again. This is a one-off, and the CDC, one of the spokespersons said to me, this is like finding a Babe Ruth card in your attic.
I mean, really, they think it's a one-off?
They think it's a one-off, but they are saying they are directing all their laboratories to take inventory, and also they are encouraging all laboratories everywhere in the United States to do a very close inventory and make sure there's nothing hiding behind some wall or
because
closet.
Smallpox could be considered a bioterrorism threat.
Yes.
Thank you.
Dr. LaPook, thank you.
Of course, bioterrorism, and we're making sure that all these labs double check everything, make sure they check their protocol. But see, they mentioned another incident that happened right before this. And yes, this was July of last year.
Learned today that about 75 government scientists may have been exposed to live anthrax bacteria. The Centers for Disease Control says it happened earlier this month at the CDC's laboratories in Atlanta. Here's Dr. John LaPook.
The unintentional exposure was discovered last Friday. The CDC says researchers transferred what they thought were non-infectious anthrax samples to labs not equipped to handle live bacteria.
Wait, wasn't that what just happened? This is exactly what just happened. They thought it was dead, but no, it was live. And we sent it to facilities that aren't ready to handle bioterror agents that are full strength. I mean, come on, people.
But the workers who processed the live anthrax used the wrong procedure. Anthrax can affect the lungs, skin, and gastrointestinal tract. Left untreated, it can cause death. Dr. William Schaffner of Vanderbilt Medical Center is an expert in infectious diseases.
Anthrax is a potential bioterrorism agent. So learning more about how it actually causes disease and how we might prevent the disease in outbreak circumstances is, of course, very important.
Now, when we go back to what we read, probably now a few months ago, digging deep into the U.S., a biological warfare program that doesn't exist anymore. That's exactly what happened back at the end of the 60s, beginning of the 70s, was that they said, well, we're not going to manufacture bioterror agents anymore. What we're going to do is we're going to go on the defensive and manufacture vaccines to protect against bioterror attacks. But like he just said. To be able to manufacture a vaccine against a bioterror attack, you still need to have the pathogens that you could potentially create a biological weapon with to be able to create the vaccinations.
Centers for Disease Control says the agency is taking aggressive steps to protect the health of all involved. That includes offering anthrax vaccine plus a 60-day course of antibiotics to potentially expose staff. Based on a preliminary investigation, the CDC believes the general public is not at risk of exposure and does not need to take any protective action.
The CDC lab and hallway areas were decontaminated, and laboratories will be reopened once they are deemed safe. An internal investigation is underway to find out how this breakdown in procedures happened.
It's really unbelievable. Thanks so much, Dr. John.
Oh, my. So then what happened was we had this big investigation and some sort of Senate subcommittee. So here now they force the CDC and the subcommittee to answer for their security lapses again last summer.
I have to think. What in heaven's name would go through the minds of some scientists thinking a Ziploc bag is enough to protect someone from anthrax?
Now, hold on. So, yes, then we find out that they were shipping the anthrax not only in unsecured commercial shipping, but in freaking Ziploc baggies.
But once the laboratory had said, here is killed anthrax, it was handled by the staff in those lower containment laboratories as if it were not infectious.
But wait, isn't that the first rule with, like, oh, I don't know, any other deadly type thing like a firearm? What's the one rule about a firearm? You always treat the firearm as if it were loaded. Well, if we're looking at pathogens that, oh, I don't know, kills 85% of anyone who is infected and doesn't get treatment right away, I would think that regardless of what we believe, whether or not it's killed or live, we should be treating it as a level 4 pathogen and make sure that it is always secured. This just, I can't even get over that this has happened again, because, I mean, I did all this last summer and I was so pissed off. This is making me now kind of annoyed.
Our subsequent studies suggest that it's likely that it was not, but the core error there was the failure to
decontaminate. But Dr. Frieden, this is like saying, I didn't know the gun was loaded. Somebody got shot. But you should always assume it is.
The CDC director was grilled by a congressional committee on the mishandling of the deadly pathogen, as well as some other recent safety lapses, including the improper transfer of a dangerous strain of bird flu, as well as the recent discovery of smallpox vials on the NIH campus.
Oh, I forgot about the bird flu improper transfer. I mean, this has been ramping up for a while. So now as we start seeing all these never-before scenes or mysterious outbreak up in the Pacific Northwest, and it looks like it's, you know, an upper respiratory, but it's not, and we're not quite sure what it is. You know, you really, really got to wonder.
What are the more disturbing findings of CDC's own report?
Question after question asking how could this happen at the CDC, the gold standard of biosafety.
If you work with something, even if it's a deadly microbe day in and day out, year after year, you get a level of familiarity that may lead to doing things that you really shouldn't do.
No one has been hurt by these lapses, but Dr. Frieden says that is no excuse.
The fact that it appears that no one was harmed and that there were no releases does not excuse what happened. What happened was completely unacceptable. It should never have happened.
You know, and the thing about all of this is when there is a bioterror attack, you know, they're going to go, oh, it's ISIS. It's the terrorists that are attacking us. But look at in the last, these videos were from July of 2014 that we just listened to, except for the very first one, which is about this newest incident from yesterday. But look at how they've been just stacking this all up. So people now, when they see that, you know, anthrax been floating around, bird flu, smallpox, they're like, nah, you know, nobody got killed then, so it should be okay. So I just stumbled across this morning a video of, I think he's, I don't know if he's CDC or if he's DOD, but I took a class back in 2006 or 2007. It was that whole CERT team national program that they had going on about keeping your family safe. I mean, it was a bunch of bullshit. It was, you know, telling us all about the terrorists coming to get us and our families. But one of the things that our community prepared for was biological terror attack with, yes, you guessed it, anthrax. Cipro is the antibiotic of choice for treatment, but you have to get treatment right away. If you don't get treated and you've been exposed to it, once your symptoms appear, you are probably beyond the window of treatment, and there is an 85% death rate with that. So anyway, this video I stumbled across this morning was from, he's dressed in some sort of general's outfit. That's what makes me think he's DOD, talking about terror attacks and in particular anthrax. It was from 3 years ago. So before we've had any of these mass lapses in security with pathogens, but let's listen to what he has to say.
The possibility of a terrorist attack is a scary thought and a very real danger. Terrorists could attack the American public in many different ways, including a bomb or by releasing a chemical, radiologic, or biologic agent. A biologic attack, or bioterrorism, is the intentional release of viruses, bacteria, or other germs to cause illness or death in people, animals, or plants. Anthrax is the most likely agent to be used in a biologic attack. It only takes a small amount to infect a large number of people.
Jeez! So glad we cleared that up. So let's just make sure, like, after this lapse we had in July, and the one guy on the subcommittee said exactly what I did. I mean, you're dealing with these highly virulent pathogens. You should always be treating it like the gun is loaded, right? Yes, right. So now this dude's saying, and this is a CDC video, so he's in like it almost looks like a general uniform, but I guess maybe they wear those at the CDC. I don't know. But he's saying it only takes a very small amount to infect a large number of people.
It's inexpensively grown from just a few spores and can be easily engineered to be drug resistant, which means it's more difficult to treat with antibiotics. So what exactly is anthrax? It's a naturally occurring bacteria in soil that can be transferred from infected animals to humans, usually by handling animal products or eating undercooked meat. Now, anthrax can also infect humans by breathing in spores that have been engineered as a weapon. In 2001, anthrax spores were mailed to news reporters and U.S. senators. These attacks involved letters which held only 1 gram of powdered spores, about the amount in a sugar packet, and still 22 people were infected and 5 people died. In comparison, an attack that used 2 kilograms of anthrax, about a 5-pound bag of sugar, could infect 100,000 people or more. Scientists have developed models of what an anthrax attack might look like. Anthrax sprayed from a plane or truck onto a city is a likely scenario. People may not see, smell, or even hear the anthrax being released. This type of attack would lead to inhalation anthrax, the most severe form of the disease, which starts with fever and other flu-like symptoms. Symptoms usually appear about 1 to 42 days after inhaling these spores.
Hold on. We're going to back up here because I want to make sure you guys hear exactly what he says here. So what would happen in an anthrax attack? Well, what's the most likely way? And here's the thing that gets me is that, you know, when we look at things such as geoengineering, and there have been questions as to what they're putting in the spray. But I mean, there are many, many unclassified documents throughout the last 50 to 70 years that have come out about all these experiments that they've done over the populations of cities, spraying different pathogens just to see what the result is going to be. So let's hear what would happen in a bioterror attack. How would the easiest way be to infect people? Well,
scientists have developed models of what an anthrax attack might look like. Anthrax sprayed from a plane or truck onto a city is a likely scenario.
There we go.
People may not see, smell, or even hear the anthrax being released. This type of attack would lead to inhalation anthrax, the most severe form of the disease, which starts with fever and other flu-like symptoms. Symptoms usually appear about 1 to 42 days after inhaling these spores. Now, unfortunately, once there are symptoms, it may be too late to treat with antibiotics.
What? So 1 to 42 days before you start experiencing flu-like symptoms. Again, remember, these symptoms that could be anything. So the first thing you're not going to think is anthrax. And even if you went to your doctor and said, hey, I think I have anthrax because I have flu-like symptoms, they're going to tell you, no, you probably don't. Take an aspirin and call me in the morning and send you home. But once you've shown symptoms, it's probably too late already to treat it.
All of this sounds frightening, and it is, but CDC and other federal agencies are working with your state and local health departments, and they're taking steps to prepare the nation for a potential attack.
Yes, by sending unsecured samples of other virulent materials, including anthrax, to labs all over the country in Ziploc baggies.
CDC helps manage a program called BioSense. And this program detects potential bioterrorism releases, including anthrax, in communities. BioSense and other local systems help ensure that authorities are aware of an attack and can get medicines to those exposed as soon as the agent has been identified. Medicine for a bioterrorism response is stored in the Strategic National Stockpile, or the SNS. If a terrorist attack occurred, CDC would distribute antibiotics from the stockpile to your state and local health departments, who would dispense it to affected communities.
Now, this is actually what we trained for. So in most communities, they designated like the high school as the distribution point, and you would have then the people working the event, and you would have your whole community start flowing in. They'd have to walk through. If they couldn't walk through, we would also have a drive-through, and you would dispense the, in this case, Cipro, that came from the Strategic National Stockpile to every member of your community. Take it like your Kool-Aid, because they've told you that you've been exposed.
Now, here at CDC, we conduct emergency preparedness exercises to help us plan, prepare, and practice what to do in the event of an attack. Exercises may include distributing medical supplies or evaluating a laboratory's ability to collect and test samples.
Obviously, they didn't do that too much longer after this June 2011 video, because all of those lapses that we heard just previous to this happened in June and July of 2014.
Other exercises involve subject matter experts who work through an emergency scenario from start to finish, determining all the steps various agencies need to take. We also learn from real events in our communities, such as the 2009 H1N1 pandemic. While the threat of a terrorist attack is frightening, it's important to remember that CDC and other agencies are taking steps to protect our communities.
And, you know, like when you hear this, obviously this is before all of these security lapses, but wow, make sure you feel safe, because the CDC is in charge and they are here to protect you. They know how to take care of all this poisonous material. Don't worry about it.
We have medicine and trained staff ready to act. You can learn more about anthrax at www.emergency.cdc.gov.
And what's interesting is I went out there this morning and there's not one word on that page about the anthrax that was shipped out by the DOD. As a matter of fact, in the slider headline, it's still about Ebola in Africa. Oh, goodness. So did I hit all these videos? I think I did. I mean, can you even believe this? So here we go again. Now we have the DOD shipping out anthrax samples that were not dead. At least one, they say. They're testing all the other ones. So, all right, now we get these never-before-seen diseases. We have bird flu raging. I haven't seen an update on that since last week, but it was at 33 million. I was going to call them birds. I mean, in general, birds. We're talking chickens and turkeys that have had to be euthanized. We know about the state of Minnesota calling up the National Guard to euthanize those chickens on one farm, because we always use military when it comes to some sort of outbreak. Well, now we're going to have to get back to chronic wasting disease, BSE, mad cow, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, because there's some big connecting points here. But for now, let's look at this in prions, by the way. Free-ranging white-tailed deer with chronic wasting disease now found in Michigan. The Michigan Department of Natural Resources and Agriculture and Rural Development today confirmed that a free-ranging deer in the Meridian Township has tested positive for chronic wasting disease, a fatal neurological disease that affects white-tailed deer, mule deer, elk, and moose. This is the first time ever the disease has been found in Michigan's free-ranging deer population. Now, here's what's so upsetting about this. Let's again go back to Plum Island. Plum Island, we also, in our research, discovered had scientists, and, you know, I had always heard this, but I found it in black and white. They had scientists that we recovered after World War II from Germany and the Nazis to come help us work on our no longer existing or soon to be ending bioterror program that we ran out of Plum Island. And Plum Island dealt specifically with diseases that would infect animals, crops, and insects as disease vectors. So that's why, as we're seeing now, they used ticks, they used fleas, they used mosquitoes, and now we're seeing all these new at least two that I know of, tick diseases that are fatal, that never before seen. And now we have Lyme's disease. Actually, I got a story on that we're going to look at next. But then the chronic wasting disease, and we had a story that, if we have time, we might have time to look at about the prions being able to be spread, because that's how they've always said that this brain-holing pathogen, whatever it is, it's a protein, actually. It's malformed proteins are what these prions are, that they can be spread through grass. What? How can they be spread through grass? So all these wild animals eat grass. And when you back the truck up and you start really looking at the big picture, and we're seeing droughts and storms and floods and fires and volcanoes and holy shit. And as this is going on, we're seeing extinctions of animal families. We're seeing the entire Pacific Ocean floor covered in dead animals. We're seeing the fact that, oh my God, they're culling 33 million chickens and turkeys, and one of them happens to be in the big state of Iowa that produces one of every five eggs consumed in the United States. We can't, half the farmers in California, because of the drought, couldn't plant this year. They had to cull all these cows the year before because they couldn't grow enough food to feed them. You start to see that there's a pretty scary picture that's forming here. And then when we look at the drought, let's add that now to the picture. The drought has contributed to animals having to be culled and food not being able to be grown. But we also now discover that, like in California, all the aquifers were contaminated by frackers. We have Nestle pumping water out of drought-stricken areas and shipping it bottled to wherever. We got the Great Lakes. We got the Finger Lakes. We got, you know, people, we are in for a rough ride. I am telling you, this extinction that I see coming is being completely 100% engineered. It has to be. And for anyone who thinks that we're going to be able, when the shit hits the fan, to go out and hunt deer or moose or elk or whatever, number one, There was a study that I read the one time with the number of deer that are available in the United States and with the number of people that live in the United States, that equals about 1.5 deer per person, okay? It's not going to get you too far. But number two, now, as all these wild animals, we got this chronic wasting disease in deer, which they're not really sure if it could pass to humans, but I wouldn't be so certain that it can't. I mean, they've also found that bovine spongiform encephalopathy, the BSE, mad-cow disease, they've been able, for a long time, thought that it could pass to humans. They said that it was eating the nerve tissue, and so they took that all out of our food, so they say. But, I mean, we've seen stories where, like in a cancer cow, where these slaughterhouses were actually knowing full well that a cow had cancer. And before they put it through for processing, they actually presented a head of a healthy cow to be tested and allowing the cancerous bodies to be slipped into processing. How, you know, once they passed the law about mad cow disease, where you could no longer process a cow that was showing signs and symptoms of neurological disturbances where they couldn't stand anymore or had the shakes, you know, how, what do you want to think that? So the first sign and symptom, they down the cow, and nobody needs to know that the cow had bovine spongiform encephalopathy because, hey, they just sent in a head of a healthy cow to be tested. You know, this is, to me, this really, and I mean, then let's add even more. Let's add all the Monsanto poison that we've been learning about and how glyphosate, in particular, is a potent, and this is something that I was talking to my husband about this morning. You know, Dr. Huber's talked about this a few times. Glyphosate is a potent antibiotic. It kills all of your good bacteria in your gut, and it kills all the good bacteria in the soil. It kills all the good bacteria in the bees. So you don't properly uptake nutrition. But not only that, so we have this executive order from last July. And oh, how interesting that that executive order came through right about the time we had all these lapses in security with virulent materials. But we had this executive order come through that had talked about now dumping $1 billion. I don't know if it was a billion, but it seems like everything's $1 billion. To combat antibiotic resistance. And who do we blame it on? We blame it on the doctors for trying to treat the cold with antibiotics. Who else do we blame it on? We blame it on the farmers for shooting all of our livestock up with antibiotics. But maybe who we should be blaming it on is Monsanto for killing all the beneficial bacteria. So the bacteria that actually grows back are the ones that are resistant to things. So now we have these superbugs. Actually, I think on the Pigmind channel, Pigmind 2, I have an entire section on vaccines and superbugs that I built. And I mean, everything is becoming a superbug now that does not respond to antibiotics. So as we have more and more of these pathogens appearing, oh no, well look, our traditional ways of curing illness no longer work. So wait, don't worry about it because biopharma has a solution for you. We've been working long and hard on these new nano vaccines that are going to cure you upside and down, and we're going to make $1 bazillion, never before tested on humans. But don't worry, because it's an emergency now, so we can fast-track everything through the FDA. And I saw when we were talking about anthrax, Jane actually posted a story in chat about the anthrax vaccine in development from 2012. But if anyone had friends who went to the Gulf War in the early 90s, you would know that they had an anthrax vaccine that they shot all of our friends up with, who now have all kinds of major health problems, and that was the vaccine of squalene. So I'd be very interested in how they are developing this quote-unquote new anthrax vaccine. All right, let's get back to the story in Michigan with these deer. It says the animal, this is this deer with chronic wasting disease, was observed last month wandering a Meridian Township residents and showing signs of illness. The homeowner contacted the Meridian Township Police Department, who then sent an officer to euthanize the animal. The deer was collected by the DNR wildlife biologist and delivered for initial testing to the DNR Wildlife Disease Laboratory at Michigan State University Diagnostic Center for Population and Animal Health in Lansing, Michigan. After initial tests were positive, samples were forwarded to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Veterinary Services Laboratory in Ames, Iowa, for final confirmation. The Michigan DNR received a positive confirmation last week. To date, there is no evidence that chronic wasting disease presents any risk to non-cervids, including humans, either through contact with an infected animal or from handling contaminated venison. However, as a precaution, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and the World Health Organization recommend that infected animals not be consumed as food by either humans or domestic animals. Now, I'm going to tell you, though, chronic wasting disease is very, very similar to bovine spongiform encephalopathy. And I mean, I haven't looked at any cell samples to say, oh, well, look, this is the same here or different here. But it's the same basic concept where basically your brain ends up like a piece of Swiss cheese, okay? And when you start comparing the way the brains appear after being exposed to BSE or the CWD, and then compare it to something like, oh, I don't know, an Alzheimer's patient or Parkinson's symptoms or whatever, any thinking human would have to raise an eyebrow and go, huh? And I do know for a fact that BSE has been passed on to humans through surgical instruments. That was a big story back quite a number of years ago, that they were not able to sterilize surgical instruments to actually even kill the bovine spongiform encephalopathy, or the human variant is CVD or CVJD, which is that Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease. They cannot sterilize. Now, someone told me just recently that they've apparently found a way. I have not found a document to prove that fact. But at least for now, know that there were documented cases where this has been spread. So, like I said, in the shit at the fan scenario, as the woods are now being loaded up with ticks that have no treatment for the diseases they carry, this new one, right? Actually, I think we should play that one. Hold on. Let's see. Tick in Connecticut and pig mine. This should pull it up. Oh, maybe. Maybe. No. I wish there was an easy way to find this stuff. Hold on. New disease. Connecticut. Tick. Oh, 2014. Well, here's one from 2014. New tick-borne illness emerges. Oh, and there is a video here. This is the same place, New Haven, Connecticut, which really bothers me because it's on the East Coast. This is, they're calling it the cousin of Lyme disease. If this plays. You know, I have to tell you, before I came down too, I was trying to find that ISIS laptop story from 2014. And I searched ISIS and bioterror, and the second I did that, my entire machine, like my mouse stopped working. I could move everywhere on the touchpad, nothing happened, and everything just froze. So I love when that happens. So this may not play. All right, I'll read while it's trying. It says, be familiar with the deer tick. Know where they could be lurking. Do a body check after visiting high-risk areas. Not only do they transmit Lyme disease, but now there is its cousin.
To today's healthcare.
We don't want to listen to the commercial. Its cousin is called Borrelia, B-O-R-R-E-L-I-A, Miyamoti, M-I. Oh, here we go.
It's on a new tick infection similar to Lyme disease.
Well, Yale researchers have been following it closely, and now they're seeing more evidence of it right here in southern New England. News 8's medical reporter Jocelyn Momenta in our New Haven newsroom tonight. She has an update. Jocelyn.
And Aaron, this story really underscores the need to be vigilant when it comes to avoiding a deer tick bite. These Yale researchers are seeing more human infection in this latest study. Take a good long look at these ticks. Be familiar with the deer tick. Know where they could be lurking. Do a body check after visiting high-risk areas. Not only do they transmit Lyme disease, now there is its cousin,
Borrelia miyamotoi.
Right now, this is new, and physicians need to be trained or need to be need to learn about this disease. We all need to learn about this disease.
Dr. Peter,
what I want to know is how all these diseases are just spawning out of nowhere. Explain this to me. How do we have all these new diseases? And I'm talking like just over the last 12 months. Isn't it just incredible how many of these new, never before seen, haven't been seen in 50-year diseases have been appearing?
Krauss at Yale School of Public Health is the lead investigator of a follow-up study tracking its prevalence in humans. Blood samples from 650 people in the Northeast were tested.
This preliminary data would suggest that this infection is not as common as Lyme disease. On the other hand, 4% is a high percentage.
A new antibody test developed in this lab helped to detect it.
Someone who has fever is better for a week or two and then develops fever again. Those are the patients especially physicians should be concerned about.
First found.
And again, oh, it's just fever, then it goes away. Then you get fever again. I mean, when I have an allergic reaction to something and I'm breathing in cottonwood, let's say, my face gets hot and I feel like shit. Is it a tick-borne disease? You know, actually, I did get some nasty bite when I was out this weekend. That's like this huge lump now on my ankle, and I'm hoping it's not a tick. But you know what I'm saying? Like, these diseases all have these very innocuous symptoms. And that's what really bothers me, because many of us could be infected with a lot of these things that don't show up for 20 years or, you know, maybe 6 months. And all of a sudden now it's too late for any type of treatment.
In Japan, Dr. Derlin Fish discovered it in black-legged ticks in Connecticut back in 2001.
All these tick-borne diseases are getting more prevalent.
Oh, 2001. Whoops.
And more common, that's tick expands its range.
Why or
so what? Bush and friends said, well, okay, the next version of Operation Be Afraid, Be Very Afraid commence. Let's start spreading not only anthrax, but what all these newly infected ticks from Plum Island before we decide we're going to sell it and move to Kansas in the Northeast and see what happens.
How the tick is expanding its range is not clear.
Some of it might be due to the climate change and other environmental factors. Mm. But I think in the future, we're going to be seeing a lot more tick-borne diseases.
It's all climate change. I get it.
Already, six diseases are linked to this same tick.
More importantly, and kind of disturbing, is that there's a virus in these ticks as well. A virus called Powassan encephalitis virus. And we've seen some cases of that around.
Typically, when tick-borne disease is diagnosed and treated early with antibiotics, the better the outcome.
Symptoms for this new infection include fever, chills, sweats, and headaches. But Dr. Krauss tells me recurring fever is what makes it stand out. Right now, there's not enough data to determine whether it could lead to a more chronic condition. The antibody test that helped to diagnose it will be available for patients later this summer. And
you know, the thing is about this story is, hold on, is that was from 2013. I want to find the one. Damn. I don't know. Well, let's try this one. This is April. Oh, yeah, this is it. It's Powassan virus. So now there's more updated information.
So what do people do if they get it?
Spending time outdoors, beware. Doctors warn about the Powassan virus, a rare tick-borne illness, but one that could be serious and has no treatment or cure.
The doctor just has to support you during that acute illness and hope that you survive.
Dr. Dan...
What? The doctor just has to support you during that acute illness and hope that you survive. What kind of an answer is that? Now, with all this genomic bullshit we have going on, and we can cure cancer now, we can't fucking cure a tick disease? Why is that? Explain that to me. Why is that? And since we just saw a video from 2013 where they discovered it, and they said that they discovered it in 2001, we're talking 14 years later.
Neil Cameron, president of the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society, says if bitten by an infected tick, you can get the virus within a matter of minutes. And while the symptoms are similar to Lyme disease, they are more severe.
You can get seizures, high fever, stiff neck, It comes on so suddenly.
Researchers with the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station now say the Powassan virus is starting to show up in Bridgeport and Branford.
I wouldn't imagine having something worse than this. It sounds really awful.
Jennifer Sirigliano was diagnosed with Lyme disease 2 years ago. The 15-year-old says it's been a long road of recovery. Now with this emerging tick-borne illness, doctors say be on the lookout.
Be more vigilant about checking. I can't stay indoors. Summer is the time to be outside.
Doctors say there are ways you can protect yourself. Wear long sleeves and pants when you're outside. Avoid spending time in bushy and wooded areas. Always do thorough tick checks after coming back from being outdoors. And wear bug spray. Reporting from Mount Kisco in Westchester County, Tracy Carrasco, CBS 2 News.
Yeah, yes, spray yourself with pesticides. Actually, when I was looking into this, because I mean, I most certainly like to spend time outdoors and go into the woods. One of the things that I found that they say can help prevent you from attracting ticks would be vinegar and water spray. I want to try that actually. Because this is really scary. I mean, there's no treatment. It could kill you. It's pretty insane. I want to, when I did the search, I came up with another story here from 2013 that I really want to just play because I'm not sure what this is, but it says toxic bomb ticks on Maldives Rubbish Island. What is a toxic bomb tick?
Around 1 million tourists flock to the Maldives each year. It's a country made up of more than 1,000 pristine islands. But close to the capital, Male, there is one place no visitor would want to go. For 20 years, Tilafushi, or Rubbish Island, has been the nation's main dumping ground. It's an eyesore, but also a serious ecological threat.
All this garbage, the most serious stuff, comes from the electronic waste. Here, we are filling the sea, shallow area, and this garbage bin, the depot is in the ocean, in liquid. So it's very easy, the heavy metals, the chemicals like lead and all these non-biodegradables to get into the ocean, into the reef around, and then get into the food chain.
More than 200 tons of rubbish are dumped on the island every day. Most is from Male, but a quarter comes from the nation's holiday resorts. Dozens of migrant workers sift through it, separating what to bury from what can be burned.
I don't know. I don't see anything about ticks, but oh my God, is this island disgusting. And of course, they employ workers from Bangladesh to walk around in this toxic soup. This is horrible. All right, so now that we've looked at all of these new and emerging pathogens and the complete lack of any type of real security, apparently, shipping virulent materials on commercial shipping planes and trucks, because, I don't know, we thought it wasn't alive. Let's take a look at the dog flu, bird flu, if you remember. The dog flu that's a dog flu. Oh, look. It is no longer available. Or maybe it is. There we go. That was weird. I clicked on it and it says, this is no longer available. I clicked on it again and it came up. And is the deadly dog flu spreading beyond the Midwest? But didn't we hear in a couple stories that it doesn't really affect dogs much? Only a couple dogs have died and they have flu-like symptoms. I don't know if this is going to play. Maybe they did remove it. Too much truth. Gotta remove it from the internet. Yeah, I'm not gonna sit here and wait for it. So whatever. Is the deadly dog flu spreading? And what was the other thing that we were gonna check on? Oh, the bird flu. Bird flu. Let's see how that's percolating. I mean, I just love the way all this stuff is just percolating like crazy. Hey, look at that. There's an update. Or, uh-oh, I think I searched too many pathogen keywords. My computer has stopped working. All right, hold on. We're going to the other machine. Let's go to the other machine. Here we go. U.S. bird flu virus seen under control within a few months, they say. Oh, that's wonderful. But this is out of Paris from Reuters. An epidemic of bird flu that has devastated U.S. poultry flocks this year is likely to be under control within a few months. Because why? Well, I heard they were working on a vaccine. And they were going to work on a vaccine for people as well to be used as a prophylaxis. It's likely to be under control within a few months as the United States steps up measures to contain the virus and the summer weather weakens it, senior officials said on Tuesday. There is, however, a high risk that bird flu strains could spread within the American continent, mainly to Mexico, the head of the Paris-based World Health Organization for Animal Health said, calling on farmers and authorities to boost biosecurity measures. Doesn't it seem to you that we're really kind of pushing the envelope on the requirement for biosecurity everywhere? This is why I'm saying put on a seatbelt for some sort of bioterror attack, because it really has become the drumbeat. No new cases of the bird flu were confirmed on Tuesday, the U.S. Department of Agriculture said in their daily notice. Iowa, the nation's top egg-producing state, and Minnesota, the top turkey producer, found 8 new poultry flocks that are thought to be infected. The U.S. poultry industry is confronting the biggest recorded outbreak of bird flu ever, which has led to the death or culling of, oh, they've updated the numbers, beyond 33 million to 40 million birds. After confirmation on commercial farms and backyard flocks in 16 U.S. states and in Canada, the disease, which manifests in several physical symptoms and a sharp drop in egg production, has led to a sharp rise in egg prices and forced producers to look for alternatives. And guys, guess what? I think it cannot worsen in the United States, he says, but let's not be so optimistic. All right, guys, that is about the show today. I can't even believe it. That hour like whipped by. It is Thursday night, so make sure you guys stick around. Mr. Kevin Blanch is up next. We have Mr. Chuck O'Chelly live tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern. Behind the Woodshed with Hal Anthony at 8, Double Crossed with Chuck at 10 p.m. Eastern, and Anti-Media Radio with S.M. Gibson at 11. All right, guys, everyone have an awesome Thursday, and I'll catch up with you tomorrow. Take care.